Okay, I would like to call the conference committee for House File 1684 to order. And our agenda is as follows. My name is Frank Hornstein. I'm the chair of the House Transportation Committee, and I'll be co-chairing this meeting and the entire process with Senator Newman, the chair of the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee in the Senate. So welcome, everybody. Our agenda for today will be that we'll first have all of the members of the House and Senate introduce themselves. You can just mention your name and your district that you represent. We'll have all of the partisan and nonpartisan staff introduce themselves. And then Senator Newman and I will make some brief opening comments, and we will go straight into a summary of the bill from our nonpartisan fiscal and policy staff. Following that, of course, there'll be questions and answers to them, and members can pause at any time to ask their questions on any item that is presented. And following that, we will then entertain a motion around accepting the same provisions from each body. And at the end, we'll have Senator Newman give us a preview of the meeting tomorrow. So with that, members, our first item of business will be to call the roll, and I will ask Mr. Dodge to do that.
Chair Hornstein?
Present.
Hornstein, present. Chair Newman?
Present.
Newman, present. Senator Begum?
Present.
Begum, present. Representative Elkins?
Present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick?
Present.
Frederick, present. Senator Howe? Senator Jasinski? Representative Cagle?
Present.
Cagle, present. Senator Osmick?
Present.
Osmick, present. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, present.
Petersburg, present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. And now let's go around and I think I'll just call on people. I think that would be easier. Of course, if we were in person, we could do members as they present themselves. But I will call on first the members of the Senate.
60 or so, I think.
Introduce themselves and then the House. So why don't we start with Senator Osmick?
Hi, everyone. Senator Dave Osmick, representing District 33, west side of Hennepin County and a chunk of Chanhassen. This is my third term in the Senate, originally elected in 12, and I'm right now the longest tenured GOP member of the Senate Transportation Committee, longest continuous tenured individual. So I guess that's my claim to fame. I was in conference committee, I believe. I've been shanghaied by Senator Newman twice now for conference committees, so or more. So good to be here.
Nice to see. Nice to have you. And my former colleague in the House, Senator Howe, we've served on the Transportation Committee together, and it's nice to be able to serve with you on the conference committee. Senator Howe, I don't know if you were here earlier, but we're just doing a round of introductions.
Absolutely, Representative Hornstein. Good to be with you on the conference committee. I represent District 13, which wraps around St. Cloud. I don't represent any of St. Cloud, but I wrap around it. And so it's great to be here and look forward to a fruitful committee.
Thank you, Senator Howe. Senator Bingham.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Good to see you again, buddy. I represent Senate District 54, which is the southeast suburbs, southernmost part of Washington County and northern part of Dakota. Served two terms in the House, also served on City Council in Cottage Grove and Washington County Commissioner. And so I'm in my second term here and appreciate the opportunity to be on the Transportation Committee and really look forward to having the discussion about needed investments.
Thank you, Senator Bingham. I'll note that we have, because a little known fact, Senator Newman is also a former House member. So I'm counting three former House members on the Senate side. Senator Newman, do you want to go now? Or we could actually do the House members and come back to you perhaps before you speak. Do you have a preference?
That's fine.
Okay. Why don't we do the House members and then Senator Newman can introduce himself. He'll give some opening comments right after that. So I don't see Senator Jasinski quite yet, but when I do see him, I will make sure that he has an opportunity to introduce himself.
Senator Jasinski will be here in just a moment, folks. He's on a quick delay. He wanted me to jump in and apologize.
Okay, no problem. We'll look forward to having him, and when he we'll have him introduce himself right before Senator Newman. Okay, so our first member is Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Petersburg, I represent 24A, which is down in Owatonna, Waseca, and I've been on the Transportation Committee, every Transportation Committee since 2012, been on a few conference committees as well, have worked with Chair Hornstein currently and have in the past as well, and I have a lot of interest in transportation, and obviously I have big interest in Highway 14 that we now have in the ending days of building it. It should be done by this fall, so that'll be nice to have that finished and taken care of. Transportation is obviously, for me, the most important program that the state government provides. It impacts every piece of people's lives. So appreciate that and looking forward to the conference committee.
Thank you very much, and I'm glad you're on our committee and look forward to our continued work together, Representative Petersburg. Next up, Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Steve Elkins. I represent House District 49B, which is kind of anchored on Western Bloomington, but also includes portions of Edina, Eden Prairie, and Minnetonka. And I'm in my second term. I've served on the Transportation Committee both times. This will be my first conference committee. And by education, I'm a transportation economist. I moved to Minnesota 36 years ago to be the SOB who set the airfares for Republic Airlines, and have served on transportation advisory committees for the City of Bloomington, the League of Minnesota Cities, the National League of Cities, the Metropolitan Council. Served on the Bloomington City Council for 9 years, the Metropolitan Council for 8 years, including a stint as chair of their transportation committee as well. So I'm a deep transportation policy wonk, and happy to join this august group.
Wonderful to have you. Thank you. And we'll be relying on your expertise on a number of issues. Representative Cagle.
Good afternoon, Representative Aaron Cagle. I represent District 37A, which is the southern part of, or the northern part of Spring Lake Park, southern half of Blaine, and a huge chunk of Coon Rapids. And so this is my third term. I've been on some variation of the Transportation Committee all through my legislative life, and this is the second conference committee I have been on. So looking forward to it.
And thank you. And I forgot to mention to everybody that Representative Cagle is the vice chair of the House Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee, and she's done a great job. And wouldn't be surprised if she has the gavel every once in a while here. But good. I understand Senator Jasinski has arrived. And Senator Jasinski, we're just doing some introductions of members, your district, where you represent, any other comments by way of introduction you want to share with us. Welcome.
Thanks, Chair Hornstein. I apologize for my delay. I was over at the Capitol during session. Senator Jasinski, District 24, which is the area of Faribault, Owatonna, Waseca, just south on 35, about 40 minutes from the Minneapolis metro area. It's my fifth year on transportation. I'm in my second term. I've done all 5 years as vice chair under Senator Newman. My second year on a conference committee for transportation. I'm also a member of bonding committee, higher ed, local government chair, and look forward to getting through this year's conference committee and getting some good things done for Minnesota. So thanks again, Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. What is really nice about our conference committee, we have a number of people that were on in 2019. So I think that continuity is very helpful, along with some new folks as well. So what we're going to do now is, before Senator Newman and myself give our brief introductions, I'd like to call on our nonpartisan staff and partisan staff to introduce themselves. And I'm just going to go in kind of the order that you all appear in my participant list here. The first staffer I would like to introduce is Lexi Stengel from Senate, the Senate Counsel. Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Lexi Stengel. I'm Senate Counsel for Transportation, and I also do elections and redistricting.
Thank you. It's good to see you again. Mr. Lee, Andy Lee from House Fiscal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff, ICAR Transportation Finance and Capital Investment.
Excellent. David Frazier. Is Mr. Frazier on?
Go ahead.
Unfortunately, I got to do it from Senator Newman's computer here, but I'm David Frazier. I'm the research.
There, are you good? Well,
we might come back to Mr. Frazier. Mr. Frazier. Okay. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. There was a House member that we missed. I apologize. Before we get to the other introductions, Representative Frederick, I'm sorry. I just didn't see you, and I know you're here. So, Representative Frederick, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure, Mr. Chair. My name is Luke Frederick. I'm from 19B, which is the Southern Minnesota communities of Mankato and Eagle Lake. This is my first term in the House, and I'm honored to be part of the conference committee here, so I'm excited for it. I also share in Representative Petersburg's excitement to see Highway 14 finish this year. Thank you.
Thank you. And my apologies again, Representative Frederick. We're very happy to see you. Mr. Frazier, I think we might have lost him, so we'll come back to him when he has a better connection. Ms. Jennifer Nelson, DFL Research for the House side.
Jennifer Nelson, like the chair just said, I'm the DFL researcher for the Transportation Committee in the House. I also cover housing and capital investment.
Excellent. Joe Marble, welcome.
Hello? Hey, I'm Representative Petersburg, socially distanced, having a great time. Really looking forward to the conference committee. I do House research for the GOP for transportation. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you so much, and we're happy to have you. Krista Boyd is next up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Krista Boyd, I'm the fiscal analyst for the Senate Transportation Committee.
Welcome. It's nice to see you again. Pat Kaluza, CA for the Senate.
Hi, I'm Pat Kaluza. I'm the committee administrator for the Senate Transportation Committee.
And I believe we also have Mr. Burris, Matt Burris, from the House House Research.
Mr. Chair and members, good afternoon. I'm Matt Burris. I'm the legislative analyst with House Research.
Excellent. So now I have to always ask, I am apologies in advance if I'd left anyone out here.
Real quick, Mr. Chair.
Oh, Mr. Howe. See, it's the obvious. Mr. Howe.
Awesome.
Hi, everyone. John Howe, committee administrator for the House Transportation Committee. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Excellent. All right. Now we think we've got everyone. I have a
Jennifer Nelson
screen that has some limited facial capacity here. So, Senator Newman, introduction and any comments that you have that you would like to make by way of introduction.
Yeah, first of all, Mr. Chairman, my CLA, Mr. Woodridge, is on.
And oh.
If he could introduce himself.
All right. Sorry about that.
No, yeah, not a problem. My name is Matt Wooldridge. As Senator Newman said, I'm his CLA, and this is my second year at the legislature.
Welcome, Mr. Wooldridge. Glad you could be with us, and thank you for your work. Now, Senator Newman, again, and my apologies if I left anyone else out.
Well, you know, there's this certain amount of dark humor that you forgot my CLA, but more importantly, you forgot your CA.
Right. That's the...
Well, as a matter of introduction, my name is Scott Newman. I am the state senator from District 18, and that encompasses four counties straight west of Minneapolis, about 65 miles or thereabouts. It's Sibley County, Meeker County, McLeod County, and a small portion of Wright County. I am the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee, and I've been on this on the Transportation Committee now for a good number of years, and transportation is, like Representative Petersburg stated, it's something that I'm really very passionate about. I think it's very important to the people of the state of Minnesota, so I don't really think it's by accident that I am on this committee. Chair Hornstein and I have worked together in the past, both on conference committees and on individual bills, and I can tell you that I am sincerely looking forward to working with Chair Hornstein again, as well as the other members of the conference committee, both those that have been here before and are new. So I am looking forward to this conference committee process. I will readily admit that while our bills are quite different in the beginning, I think that we stand a very good chance of working out our differences and coming out of this conference committee with a good solid bill. And I think I really believe that it's the goal of all of us to put together a bill that is good for the state of Minnesota. And I truly hope that this is going to be a bipartisan effort to do just that. Chair Hornstein and I have talked over the manner in which these hearings will be held, and we have agreed that we're going to do it by Zoom rather than hybrid or Zoom and hybrid. For my part, the reason is if we go with Zoom, while it is clumsy, it truly is compared to the conference committees where we were able to meet in person. I think if we go with a Zoom meeting, we stand a better chance of having public input and public participation. I think that's vitally important. If we go to a hybrid method, I just got to thinking that after my conversation with Chair Hornstein that, you know, we kind of limit folks coming in and testifying in person. And it, I don't know about state office building, but getting into the state Senate building isn't all that easy these days. You need somebody to get you in the door and usher you to where you're going. So it is my hope that with the Zoom meeting, we can have more public participation, and that is the reason for, from my standpoint, the reason for the Zoom meetings. I will tell you that it is my intention that we have a robust discussion through the conference committee process, that we will entertain amendments, we will take votes. But in the end, it will be my position that we come out of the conference committee and through that process with a conference committee report and a bill to our respective bodies. I think it's really important, especially given the last year of what we have gone through, that we participate in a conference committee process that is open to the public with the public participation, and we have those public discussions. I do not anticipate that we will pass a transportation bill other than through this conference committee process. And I am very hopeful that in the long run that that is going to work and that we are going to be successful. Thank you, Chair Hornstein.
Thanks so much, Chair Newman. And I would echo Chair Newman's thoughts about the committee process. I'll just say by way of introduction, Frank Hornstein, the chair on the House side, the area I represent is District 61A, which includes parts of downtown and southwest Minneapolis. Senator Newman and I have, I think this is now our fourth conference committee that we have co-chaired together, our fourth major bill that we have done together. We did hands-free cell phone, we did the Minlars transition, the bill in 2019, the omnibus bill, and now this one. So we have an excellent working relationship. And as Chair Newman mentioned, while the bills are quite different, and you know, we are fully aware of that, and know that we're going to have to work through some challenging issues. But we're committed to doing that. We're committed to doing that together in an open and transparent process. We had an excellent meeting this past Wednesday to start to plan for the conference committee. Our staff has been very engaged up till now. And so what we'd like to do here in the next couple of days is start to build a bill. Really, we're starting literally with a blank sheet of paper here. And so what we would like to do is build a bill together, which will require a compromise on both of our parts, all of our conferees and the House and the Senate, and we'll obviously be accepting things that we may not want and vice versa, but that is how we build a bill. And we want to start the base of that with, over the next couple of days, going through provisions that are the same and similar. Some of the similar provisions are will need to be worked through a bit. They're not exactly similar, so we will spend some time on that tomorrow and potentially Wednesday. But for today, as I said at the beginning, our task is to hear from our nonpartisan staff, both fiscal and policy, so that the Senate can understand what's on our bill and vice versa. And at any time, any member should feel free to pause and ask a question. Following that presentation, then we will go over the same provisions, not same and similar, but the same ones, and have an opportunity to discuss those. And if there is our agency representatives or others that would like to comment, they'll be able to. And then it's my expectation and hope that we will have enough time today then to adopt those provisions, and we will have the beginnings of a bill. And that is the goal for today. So with that, if there aren't any other questions about process, we will be meeting. We have a pre-assigned time on the House side of Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. The Senate is Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon. And of course, Senator Newman and I will be discussing, agendas ahead of time as best we can. Of course, everyone is waiting for the ultimate amount of general fund money we get to work with, which I think is going to be very, very critical for the deliberations of this committee. We expect that at some point, perhaps in the next week or so, but no, we don't really know exactly when that will happen. And once that happens, we will really start rolling up our sleeves and really putting the bill together. But for now, it's same provisions and going over the bill. And I'd like to call first on our fiscal staff. We'll go over the fiscal provisions on each, the House and Senate side initially. And with that, if there aren't any additional questions, we can go from there. I understand that Ryan Majerus from the Senate DFL Research has joined us too. Mr. Majerus, do you want to just quickly introduce yourself and then we'll get on to presentation from fiscal staff. Mr. Majerus.
Yes, Ryan Majerus, Senate DFL Research. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Okay, I don't know if it's Mr. Lee or Ms. Boyd to kick us off, but I would like to call on you to start us through the fiscal aspects of this bill on each side.
Mr. Chair, Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. Krista Boyd is going to be going through the sort of the spreadsheet, but just right now, I think we talked about earlier, Mr. Howe is going to do share screen for the appropriations tracking spreadsheet. There you go.
Everyone see it okay?
Yep.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I believe I'm going to start. We were asked to do sort of a high-level walkthrough of the spreadsheet to not maybe get involved in the nitty-gritty of every line, but obviously any questions can stop us at any time. I'm going to start on the Senate side. For those who need orientation to the spreadsheet, the first couple number columns are the previous biennium of 2021. There's a couple columns summarizing the governor's rest. The next columns labeled HF 1684-3E are the House provisions, and the last columns HF 1684-1E are Senate provisions. So, from MnDOT, a lot of the line items under change items for the Department of Transportation under the Senate are shifts of what previously in the base are trunk highway fund spending and are shifting to general fund spending. So there's a reduction of a trunk highway fund base appropriation and a replacement with general fund spending. And I'm not going to go through all those. They're in most areas of the Department of Transportation, except for state road construction and local roads. And that overall is a reduction in MnDOT of trunk highway fund spending of $66.8 million. Partial replacement general fund appropriation of $48.6 million. So I'm not going to go through those one by one, unless there are questions. And the only other thing I'm going to point out before I shift it over to Mr. Lee is under aeronautics, that's on line 21 of the House and the Senate share appropriations related to governor's rec. These are costs of new enforcement and regulation pieces in the department related to drones. So after that, I believe Mr. Lee will pick up some line items that are on.
Thank you. And so the first thing that I'll note, similar to what Ms. Boyd mentioned of a number of places where there's kind of a similar change to a lot of different appropriations on the House side, and also a few on the Senate side, there's appropriation increases that match the governor's request. You can see the first of those on line 21 for aeronautics. There's also one under transit on line 38. And so that was both governor's rec and the House position for an appropriation increase. I just mentioned it this first time, but there's a number of those that are throughout the spreadsheet. I'll point out a few one-time appropriations on this first page. On line 39, 50, and 60, there's a couple one-time appropriations. The first is $3.4 million on the House side for active transportation as a one-time appropriation. And then $2 million for Safe Routes to School, and that's in addition to the $500,000 base, also one time. And you can see that on line 50. And then there's another House item on line 59, the second Amtrak train to Chicago, $2.5 million, and that's another one-time appropriation. Moving on to the next page, there's an operating adjustment on lines 67 and 68, and then there is a Senate item on the next one. I'll give that to Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I was just checking if I was still unmuted, which I am. On line 71, there's one-time appropriation of $1 million from the general fund in fiscal year 22. This is for a statewide freight optimization tool. for MnDOT, and later we'll see some other costs from Department of Employment and Economic Development related to implementation of that.
Mr. Chair and members, the spreadsheets show a little bit of statutory changes that are both governor's recommendation and a House position on lines 72 and 73, having to do with rail safety. These don't show up in the totals because they're changes in statutory allocation. So they're just noted those to show the amount. Then there's a House-only item on line 82, which is an appropriation for electric vehicle infrastructure. Then moving to the state road appropriations, these are largely trunk highway appropriations that are the bulk of the appropriations to MnDOT. There's an operating adjustment under operations and maintenance on the House side, and then a one-time appropriation on line 112 on the House side of $6.2 million from the general fund for planning and design of a freeway cap over a section of I-94 in the Rondo neighborhood in St. Paul. Again, operating adjustment, and then on line 114, a $500,000 one-time appropriation for highway corridor planning in the first MnDOT district. Then, unless Ms. Boyd, if you wanted to cover the Senate item or not, I don't sure on the O&M.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Oh, yeah. That is, I should have pointed that out. There are a number of things that aren't labeled. Shifting trunkway fund spending to general fund, but this is one of those items. There are a couple places in statute where a sum sufficient is now appropriate trunk highway, or funds are allowed from the trunk highway for that purpose that are shifted to an open general fund appropriation. So those were included, those totals I stated earlier. This is one under operations and maintenance. And I'll shift it back to Mr. Lee, if he's ready.
Great, Mr. Chair and members. So going on to page three then, starting on program delivery, there's some changes that we'd mentioned earlier in terms of either operations increase or change from general fund or from trunk highway to general fund on the Senate side. And appropriations increase for state road construction. You can see that on line 140 and 141. And then there's a Senate item on corridors of commerce on line 148. And I'll mention there's actually a earlier error in a House budget number. The debt service for trunk highway bonds is essentially a forecast base, and the House bill was using a base number for that was from a earlier version of the forecast. So on line 155, that represents a error in the House numbers. And a little bit later, the House authorizes $400 million in additional trunk highway bond authorization in fiscal 2024. And so at the end of the spreadsheet, there's an explanation on how much that increase is. But the spreadsheet reflects the bill language as it is, but the base would essentially reflect the Senate side for the first 2 years and be different numbers for the tails. I think that is mostly it on the state road appropriation. So, Mr. Huff, you could go to the next page. Very quickly here on the House side, as a result of a few revenue changes in the motor fuels tax, the registration tax, and the motor vehicle sales tax, there are increases as a result of the constitutional formula for the County State Aid Highway Fund and the Municipal State Aid Street Funds, and also a direct appropriation for small cities. And you can see that on the House side on line 168, 195, and 202. And there's also some changes on the Senate side. And I'll hand that over to Ms. Boyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On lines 186 and 195, these are pass-through increases of appropriations to county state aid and municipal state aid related to other changes to the bill in the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. On the Senate side, it's primarily the auto parts sales tax increase to highway user tax, the electric vehicle surcharge increase, and the license plate fee restructure. We're about $8.2 million that is now appropriated to DVS for license plate procurement will now stay in the Highway User Tax Fund related to base and be go out in the pass-through formula to the state aid funds as well. And then on lines 187 and, let's see, 187 and 205, this is related to the auto parts sales tax increase in the Senate language. 3% of that auto parts sales tax will now be going to the Small Cities Assistance account, and 3% of that will be going to the Town Road account and the County State Aid Highway Fund. And then on lines 188 and 206, this shows transfers from the general fund to the town road account and to small cities.
All right, and then so closing at MnDOT, the next few lines are agency management. As mentioned earlier, those are either changes in replacing Trunk Highway Fund with general fund on the Senate side and doing operational increases on the House side. With one other item on line 223, there's a governor's rec and House item of $100,000 a year or $200,000 over the biennium from the general fund for tribal training at MnDOT. And Mr. Howe, if you could move to the next page, there's an appropriation for MnDOT buildings, largely similar to other operating adjustments or changes in Trunk Highway and General Fund. Then there's the totals for MnDOT, and there's a and then moving on to the Metropolitan Council. On the House side, there are a few one-time appropriations that you can see on line 267 through 270. One is for a for the Highway 494 travel demand management organization. And then $250,000 for a study on the Highway 55 corridor for transit, and then $500,000 for zero-emission transit vehicle transition for the Metropolitan Council. And then there's one ongoing item on the House side of $32,000 a year for the MPCA to do air quality modeling. And also on the House side is a forecasted base starting in the fiscal 2024-2025 biennium, where the base amount would reflect the costs for operating the Metro Mobility Service. That's you can see that on line 179 on the House side. And I should note here there was a change in the estimate from the Metropolitan Council with the updated fiscal note for the bill. And so that's a $500,000 increase from what appears line N, or on, sorry, column N. So that should be $52,740,000. And I'll let Ms. Boyd talk about the Senate changes on that council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under transit system operations on line 270, there's a sizable reduction to the base appropriation from the general fund in fiscal years 22 through 24 and coming back to base funding in fiscal year 25. And under Metro Mobility, that is similar, similar reductions for 22 through 24, a complete reduction of the base appropriation from the general fund in 25 to be replaced with an similar to the House language, a forecast general fund obligation for Metro Mobility. So that would be tracked separately, then direct appropriations to Metropolitan Council. The base number here is used as a placeholder for what that general fund obligation will be in fiscal year 25. And then if Mr. Lee doesn't mind, if we can move to the next page, I'll start the Department of Public Safety. Appropriations. Okay. We're going to start with administration and related services under Department of Public Safety. And to summarize again, these contain on the Senate side a number of shifts from Trunk Highway Fund into General Fund. And this, in the end, will leave the Department of Public Safety's Administration Division
with only general fund direct appropriations in the Senate language. So that would be a reduction of $19.7 million in 22 and 23 from the Trunk Highway Fund and Highway User Tax Distribution Fund together, and a replacement of that with $19.7 million from the general fund. And I believe those were all the items in the Senate side. So I'll turn it back to Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair, the only House change item on here is the operating adjustment that's split the governor's rec and House position on line 310. And that's all the change items on that page. So if you go on to page 7. This is the State Patrol appropriations. And the House has an increase on line 358. And this increase reflects the governor's recommended level funding increase for the State Patrol. And I should note that it also includes appropriation changes in fiscal 2021. And I'll note one other thing. You'll see that there is a Senate position on line 354 that is canceling and reappropriating an appropriation from the last biennium for the State Patrol Academy, and the governor and House language extends that prior appropriation, whereas the Senate approach cancels it and reappropriates it. Essentially accomplishes the same thing, but doing it slightly differently. I'll let Ms. Boyd talk about any the other State Patrol changes on the Senate side.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, there's a couple line items under patrolling highways, commercial vehicle enforcement, capital security, and vehicle crimes unit that all carry the governor's recs numbers for State Patrol body-worn cameras for all of these areas and the different funds that fund those areas. And then there's another appropriation on line 357 for State Patrol investments. This is related to a governor's recommendation for investments in patrolling highways, but a slightly smaller number than in the governor's rec, and this is designed to fund an additional 25 state troopers. I believe that's it on the Senate side for State Patrol.
And then, Mr. Howe, if you could move to the next page. So, Mr. Chair and members, this page is the driver and vehicle services appropriations. These are a combination of special revenue and the base for the vehicle services fund, also a portion of of highway user tax distribution funding. So on the House side, there's an appropriation that is somewhat above the governor's level for driver services. And you can see that on line 411 and 412. And these are coming out of the driver services operating account. And then on the House side, there is an appropriations increase for the vehicle side of DVS that you can see on line 433, and also an appropriations increase specific to Real ID temporary staffing, also out of the vehicle services account in the Special Revenue Fund, and that's on line 447. And those are the House changes.
And Mr. Chair, there's some more changes on the Senate side in this area. Starting on line 413, well, I'll just sum up. There are a number of programming changes in this area, programming changes to the FASTDS system related to various policy provisions. Starting on line 413, there's some programming costs related to making available same-day driver's license issuance. I believe that's in I might be mixing it up with another provision, but I believe that's in two sites. Those will be available. On line 416, I'm just going to skip down a little bit. Line 416, there's another programming cost related to the new no-show fee for driver's exams, allowing that fee to be collected. And then going back a little, there's some costs related to FTEs for other provisions. On line 414 for third-party CDL testing, there's some administrative costs. And then right below that on 415, there's some administrative costs. I believe that's a half FTE related to online driver's education, reviewing and supporting that program. And then down below in vehicle services, on lines 427 and 428, you'll see the reduction to the highway user tax base appropriation for license plate procurement and manufacture. And this will be funded instead out of the vehicle services operating account and the special revenue fund that will be supported by new revenue brought in from increased plate fees. And those plate fees on the Senate side are start in the Senate language are scheduled to start in fiscal year 23. So fiscal year 22, that appropriation will come off the fund balance for that, or the account balance for the vehicle services operating account. And then similar to driver services, there are some programming costs. Starting on 432, there's programming costs related to new motor vehicle bulk data subscriptions. Actually, that might be the only programming cost. Other than that, there's some governor's recs on 430 and 431 for expanding the lifetime veteran plates. 430. 431 is the temporary trip permits for out-of-state carriers. Those are also programming costs. Online, 424 or 434 is the Real ID temporary staffing. That's analogous to 447, line 447 in the House. It's a slightly lower amount to account for the amount that was spent in the last appropriation of $10,000, and that's one time from the special revenue account. Line 435 is outfitting and staffing new inspection sites in two sites in Minnesota. This is to go along with the salvage title provisions. And then on line 436, there's self-service registration kiosks I believe these are at deputy register offices, and this is costs related to, I believe that's programming costs one time related to that. Two more things I want to point out. On line 417 and 437, these are statutory payments. We'll talk about these provisions later, I believe, when we'll go through the policy. These are payments from DVS, from the operating accounts, to driver's license agents and to deputy registrars. And these are based on, I believe it's $3 per transaction for driver's license agents and $1 per transaction for vehicle renewals to deputy registrars and $3 for every other transaction. So for every transaction, DVS would be paying the driver's license agents or deputy registrars a payment for those. And I'm going to move on to the next page if you want to go down to page 9. There are two items in traffic safety for DPS. One is one time in 22 and 23, one time general fund appropriations of $35 million. For grants to school bus companies and school districts for stop arm cameras to be installed on school buses. And then there's a small amount on line 460 for administration of those grants in those 2 years. And I'll pass it back to Mr. Lee.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, there's only two house change items on this page. One's an operating adjustment for traffic safety that's on line 458. And then a general fund appropriation one time for hazardous substance transportation incident preparedness under DPS at $3.195 million. That's on line 472. I'll pass it back to Ms. Boyd.
If we can go to the next page, page 10. Thank you. And this is, as you can see, all Senate. These are other MnDOT projects. These are individual projects, mostly highway. There, I believe, is one airport project. And these are all one-time appropriations, roughly half from the Trunk Highway Fund and roughly half from the, in terms of numbers of projects, roughly half of the projects from the general fund. And you'll see the totals on lines 515 and 516, about $84 million from the general fund. And about $123 million from the Trunk Highway Fund. And then I'll pass it back to Mr. Lee for the next page.
Thanks. And Ms. Chair and Mr. Howe, if you could go to the next page, please. All right. So there's a few change items under Department of Revenue on the House side. The first one on line 552 is a tax interaction that has to do with an allowance that's a governor's rec for the Met Council to issue bonds backed by the property taxing authority of the council. And so because of that, there is an interaction on the property tax side. And so this is accounting for that general fund expenditure, and that's $50,000 in the first biennium and $1.62 million in the tails. And then there's also a tax interaction on the House side that's a result of a change in the fuels tax, and that is on line 532. There are statutory requirements of aid and payments to counties with casinos, and so this is accounting for that change because of the change in the rate as a result of the fuels tax indexing in the House side. And I'll pass it back to Ms. Boyd.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, line 530 is the staff cost for staff support at the Department of Employment and Economic Development related to that procurement of the freight optimization tool at MnDOT. And then on line 531 is one-time appropriations of $3 million from the general fund in 22 and 23 for the existing airport infrastructure grant program through DEED. Those are one-time. Then I think we can move on to revenues on the next page, and I believe Mr. Lee will start with those.
Certainly. So going through these, there's the first item is a governor's rec, also a House and Senate provision on unmanned aircraft system enforcement regulations. Then there are a few House-only positions on electric vehicle surcharge distribution changes. I'll pass it to Ms. Boyd for the next one.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I believe we're on line 551. These are changes to the existing electric vehicle surcharge collected at the time of registration or renewal, and three additional surcharges on plug-in hybrid electric vehicles and other electric motorcycles. And so this would be an increase to the highway user tax distribution fund of about $6.6 million in the biennium.
Then, Mr. Chair and members, there's a House item on another electric vehicle item on line 552 and 553. That's a general fund transfer of $2.195 million for the EV infrastructure account. And you can see that appropriation earlier in the appropriations lines under MnDOT. And then there is a governor's rec and a House position on line 554, 555, and 556. The first two of these are changing the statutory allocation of fine revenue that was current law is deposited in the Trunk Highway Fund and under the House position would be deposited to the Rail Safety Account. And then there's also a governor's rec and House position for additional railroad inspectors, which would incur a higher assessment from the railroads. The next item is a recognition of federal highway aid increases, and that's obviously the same on all sides. And then the next few items are the revenue changes on the House side as a result of the motor fuels tax indexing on line 558. Then the next line, the vehicle registration tax changes, and then the motor vehicle sales tax rate changes on the next two lines. And I'll pass it back to Ms. Boyd.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, the next lines, 562 through 566, summarize changes to the allocation of auto part sales tax. Both the House and the Senate have language, but they treat them very differently. In current law, auto part sales tax generally goes to the general fund, except that there is a set dollar amount that is transferred monthly to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, and that comes out to about $145 million a year every year. What this would do on the House side, and Mr. Lincoln, please correct me if I'm wrong, would keep the transfer at $145 million but split it up different ways. So the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund would end up getting slightly less, and instead that amount would go to small cities assistance, township roads, and some to Greater Minnesota Transit. I think I have that right. On the Senate side, it would be an increase a decrease to the general fund. So instead of a flat dollar amount of $145 million a year to the Highway User Tax Fund, it would be a percentage in law. So 60% would now go to transportation purposes and 40% would remain in the general fund. So that would be an overall decrease to the general fund And a slight increase to the highway user tax fund. So that would be at 54% of auto part sales tax, and then 3% each to small cities and township roads. You can see those on lines 564 and 565. And if I said that correctly, Mr. Lee, I will keep going with the Senate provisions. I'm sorry, you think you have one more in there on line 567.
Mr. Chair, there's one sort of unique House position, which is a reduction to the Highway Use Tax Distribution Fund as a result of a proposal for a change in the vehicle rental tax. And you can see that on line 567.
Okay, and on 568, I'm going to sum these up very quickly. These are a couple of transfers from the general fund to other funds. So 568, 569 is a transfer of $30 million to the rail service improvement account. The next lines are transfers from the general fund to the small cities assistance account. And the next two lines are transfers from the general fund to the town road account in the county state aid highway fund. And then the line after that, 574, is a common provision between the House and Senate. This is increasing hauling permit fees for soybean meal hauling vehicles. And that would be a small amount of revenue due to the permits for those. And then the last two are 575. There is a change later in the policy language on the uses of MinPass fee revenue. And MinPass corridors. And this would overall, to simplify it, be a reduction of the amount going to Met Council for purposes in the corridor and an increase to the amount of the revenue retained by MnDOT. So you can see those numbers on line 575. It's about $1.1 million for the biennium. And then on line 576, this is a cancellation of an amount. This is related to a cancellation of fiscal year 21 amount for passenger rail up in MnDOT. $271,000, and so it's recognized again as revenue in 22 since it fell to the bottom line of the general fund. Mr. Lee, can pick up the mic.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just will note on the cancellation that appears on the Senate side, that's also carried on the House side, but on the House side there's general fund spending, so it nets out in the fiscal 2021 column. There is a change on the Met Council on the House side on line 579, and that is a 0.5% sales tax for a subset of the seven county Twin Cities metropolitan area, and that is a revenue increase to the Metropolitan Council of about $376 million in the upcoming biennium and $540 million in the FY24-25 biennium. I'll hand it back to Ms. Boyd.
Oh, I'm sorry. The next line on line 580 is just related to 575 up above in MnDOT. This is just the difference of those amounts, reduction to Met Council and increase to MnDOT retaining that revenue for MnPass. So we can go to the next page. Thank you. Mr. Lee, would you like to
pick up? So these are the revenue change items for the Department of Public Safety. And the first one is a common item between the governor, the House, and the Senate, and that is depositing abandoned money related to the state patrol in the general fund. And so that's a revenue to the general fund of about $85,000 over the biennium. And then there's a few House positions on modifying license reinstatement fees. This is a number of sections in the policy language of the bill, it has a general fund impact of about, or estimated to be about $160,000 a biennium, and a special revenue fund impact of about $1.126 million, which are the DVS special revenue funds. And I believe the next item is on the Senate side.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Line 586 is the new fee revenue from increasing plate fees related to backing up the license plate fee restructure. So increasing that appropriation from special revenue and decreasing the highway user tax distribution fund amount. And then the next couple lines are carried on both the House and Senate side, and these are governor's recs. So very quickly, These are a small revenue reduction related to expanding lifetime veteran plates, and that's for special revenue, a small revenue increase related to the temporary trip permits for out-of-state carriers. On line 589, this is for the DVS data subscriptions fee increase, about $88,000 a year to special revenue. On line 590, this is for partial payment allowance for reinstatements of driver's licenses. Will be increased revenue of almost $500,000 a year to the special revenue. And then the next on line 591 is a common House and Senate item. It is not a governor's recommendation. It's increasing the motorcycle endorsement fee, and that will go to the motorcycle safety fund and the special revenue, or motorcycle safety account and special revenue fund, and that's revenue of about $544,000 a year. And Mr. Lee can pick it up from there.
And Mr. Chair, on line 592, there's a number of special plate provisions on the House side. And this is a summary of those amounts going to those specific causes that are backed by the plate fee. Then on lines 593 through 596, there's a few transfers. The first one is $2 million from the vehicle services account in special revenue fund to the driver services account. And then the second one is in fiscal 2024, from the vehicle services account to the general fund. And these are both House only positions. And I'll turn it back to Ms. Boyd.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, on line 597, this is revenue realized from imposing a no-show fee of $20 when people don't show up, or I believe there's other provisions, but basically it's a no-show fee for driver's exams. And that would be revenue of about $667,000 a year to the special revenue fund. The next are increased revenue from increased inspection. Revenue from increased inspection, the fee is not increased, but there will be more inspections as a result of the provisions relating to salvage titles. And that money goes both to the general fund and to the vehicle services operating account special revenue fund. And then there are two cancellations realized. These provisions are similar in the House and Senate, but the mechanical way they're processed in the bills is different. So you won't see these on the House side, but they're there, basically. On line 600, there's a public safety support cancellation of $220,000. The cancellation is in 21, and the revenue is then realized as such in 22, similar to the cancellation of the amount from Trunk Highway Fund from the Trooper Academy in 21 is picked up as $1.7 million in 22. And Mr. Lee can take it up.
Mr. Chair, there's a few more tax interactions as a result of some of the revenue changes on the House side on lines 604, 605, and 606. Those just would be foregone revenue as a result of those changes to the general fund. And then on lines 608 through 612 are the changes, kind of the net changes on both the governors, or the governors, the House, and the Senate. For the constitutional formula for the highway user tax distribution fund. So this just shows the math of how much would, as a result of the various changes, go from the HUTD to the highway user tax distribution fund, or go, excuse me, to the trunk highway fund, county state aid highway, and municipal state aid streets funds. And then, Mr. Hunt, if you could go to the next page. Mr. Chair, members, this is a summary of the general fund changes and also base amounts for Department of Transportation, Metropolitan Council, DPS, Department of Revenue, and DEED, and also a summary of the revenue changes at the bottom. So you can see on the House side, the total general fund change from base, if you're looking at line 659, column I in 2021 is $1,021,000, and the change from base over the upcoming biennium is $38.594 million, and then the change from base in the tails for the FY24-25 biennium is $116,760. And those are the House changes from base for the general fund.
Oh, I suppose, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I suppose I can state the Senate changes just really briefly. In 22 and 23, the net change to general fund is an increase of 220 million in additional spending, and in 24 and 25 is about 102.6 million. And I believe that wraps up the spreadsheet, Mr. Chair, unless Mr. Lee had anything else to add.
I think that's all I have. One note, just the bottom box shows the House proposal for trunk highway bond authorization with 175 for corridors of commerce, 225 for the state road construction, 400,000 for bond sale expenses, and then the debt service estimate change from base is 12 million in 24 and 31 million in 25. And that's all I have, unless there's any questions.
Members, thank you so much for that very thorough and excellent presentation, both Ms. Boyd and Mr. Lee. Members, if there are any questions, we could use the raise hand function, and I'll call on you. And if I miss you, which has sort of been the theme, I've missed a few people already in the introductions, Mr. Dodge will alert me to that. And Mr. Dodge is our my wonderful LA, and he's also the CLA of the committee. And I understand that I also saw earlier that the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee is on the call as well, Chair Moran. She's an ex officio member, so I wanted to welcome Chair Moran to the committee as well. So are there any questions of members to either the either of the fiscal analysts on any of the provisions that they went through on either the House or the Senate side? Okay, let's see. I don't see any hands up. So members, we will move on. Again, thanks. And I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot more from our fiscal staff as we work through many of these issues over the next couple of weeks. So thank you again, Ms. Lee and Ms. Boyd, or Mr. Lee and Ms. Boyd. And let's now go to the policy provisions. And I've asked our staff here to go through these as thoroughly as possible, but not spending time on every single provision, but sort of the main ones and the highlights. And of course, we're going to be getting to the same and similar separately. So I don't know if it's Ms. Stengel or Mr. Burris wants to kick us off, but the floor is yours. Welcome. Thank you for all of your work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm Matt Burris with House Research, and I can start us off. As you mentioned, you had asked for something a bit more abbreviated than going section by section. So I'll be starting with a brief introduction to a couple of the documents that had been distributed virtually to committee members, and then walking through highlights of House-only sections, followed by Senate-only sections from Ms. Stengel. So to begin with, one of the documents that's distributed is a side-by-side, and this is in a landscape format. I'll just hold it up here to give you a quick orientation to it. It's titled Transportation Finance and Policy Omnibus. This shows both the House and Senate language side by side, and or there are blanks on one side or the other where it's House only or Senate only. The House language is located on the left side. Senate language is located on the right side. That's largely by convention because it is a House file. For the most part, the order of the language follows the structure of the House bill, although there are a couple of adjustments that are based on what staff thought would be the best way to present and review the language. So one thing to note is there are several articles, so section numbers will repeat throughout the document because section numbering starts over within each article. And in order to accommodate the comparison, you will see a number of repeats of section numbers that might actually seem to be out of order, particularly on the Senate side, because there are several articles that are restructured. So just so that you're aware of that, those basics to the side-by-side. One other aspect of the side-by-side is the numbering is starts with R. So we'll be talking about pages and lines and numbering from both the House language and the Senate language, as well as side-by-side documents and page numbers of other documents. So just so that you're aware, all the R numbers are in reference to this side-by-side document. The other document that has been distributed that'll generally work off here to go through the House-only language is a comparison summary. This groups some of the sections together that are related or part of a broader provision that are split apart as you know, as the bill is assembled in both the House and Senate language, where things are generally in statutory order, but related provisions are grouped for purposes of the summary. So that's titled Transportation Omnibus Conference Committee, House File 1684 Comparison Summary. So moving to a summary of House-only provisions, Article 1 for both House and Senate are largely appropriations, transfers, and some fiscal provisions. That's the substance of that has largely been covered through the side-by-side or the walkthrough of the spreadsheet. So I won't go into detail other than to highlight that there are appropriations for both House and Senate in this article, the House transfer language, as well as a budget setting requirements is found in that article. House Article 2 is a House-only set of provisions on trunk highway bonding. Mr. Lee had highlighted this. This authorizes a total of $400 million in trunk highway bonds, and that authorization is delayed, so it would be in fiscal year 2024, and the funds are split between state road construction generally and a portion for the Corridors of Commerce program. Moving then to House Articles 3 and a little bit of Article 6, and then a couple parts of Senate Articles 2 and 3. This contains the most kind of most significant or the bigger budget impact finance, tax, and fee provisions. So on the House side, there's already a discussion of the auto parts reallocation. So this modifies the distribution of general sales tax revenue that's attributed to auto parts sales so that some percentage portions go to small cities, town roads, and Greater Minnesota Transit. The House language also has a separate section with a phase in for what those percentages are set to be for fiscal years 22 and 23. Then the House provision or House proposal in Article 3, Sections 2 and 3 involves a modification to the registration tax. And that motor vehicle registration tax has a rate setting that's based on the MSRP of the vehicle that's depreciated for purposes of calculating the tax. And the House language modifies that depreciation schedule for vehicles in their second through fifth year of life. So the percentage reductions are less. There's less removed from the base value in those years. Moving then to another House provision that's found on page R47, if you're following along in the side-by-side. There are a couple of sections that are a House-only proposal regarding the state rail safety inspection program. This was, again, touched on in the spreadsheet walkthrough review. And this modifies the program requirements, and in particular, it provides authority to the Department of Transportation to modify its assessments on rail companies for state rail inspectors so that up to six positions plus associated program costs could be assessed of the railroads. And there are various technical changes made. House, back on in Article 3 now, House Sections 5 and 6 create a indexing provision on the motor fuels tax. So that's for gasoline, diesel, as well as special fuels, so that based on a cost index, the rate of the tax would change annually. And then another provision that's House only was also mentioned in the review of revenues on the spreadsheet. This allows for motor vehicle rental firms to retain an additional portion of a fee that's imposed to cover registration tax costs that the firm had incurred. And the amount that can be retained is based on revenue that didn't meet the registration tax that had been imposed for those firms' vehicles in 2020. And then House Sections 8 and 9, still in Article 3, direct the Metropolitan Council to impose a transit sales tax in the metropolitan area. It's actually a subset of the area, the transit taxing district, and that's at a rate of 0.5%. The provision also provides for authority for the council to issue revenue bonds that would be bonds for transit purposes that would be backed by this revenue, the sales tax revenue stream. And the purposes that are allowed are largely transit oriented for uses of the sales tax dollars. And then moving to section 10, this is also in the taxes and fees area. It increases the rate of the motor vehicle sales tax, which is currently at 6.5%, and it would increase it to 6.875%. Next is Article 4, and this is a series of sections that involve driver's licenses and identification cards. And the thrust of this set of sections is to broaden eligibility for who can obtain a driver's license or identification card without having to prove lawful or legal presence in the United States. It also identifies a number of documents that can be presented in order to demonstrate identity and residency in Minnesota, and it contains some protections around data sharing related to holders of these licenses or identification cards. And then there are some marking requirements that are set to highlight this, how this card was obtained. And there is a more limited renewal period compared to other licenses and identification cards. It's a shortened renewal period. So that is Article 4 of the House language. Moving then to House Article 5. This contains a series of active transportation bicycle provisions. The first set of provisions that are House only deal with bicycle regulations, and they modify and centralize some definitions regarding bicycles and bicycle lanes, update and revise some of the traffic laws around bicycles, including to establish that a bicycle lane is not a shoulder when one is established, set passing rules for motorists passing a bicyclist, clarify some of the rights and duties of bicyclists, as well as modify operating rules for bicyclists. For instance, authorizing a bicyclist to move through an intersection from a right-hand turn lane. And that's a number of sections sort of spread throughout Article 5. Article 5, Section 5 is contains a directive to the Department of Transportation regarding bikeway design, as well as providing assistance to local units of government. And then Article 6 and the substance is really in Article 24 creates or recreates an advisory committee around active transportation. This had expired a couple of years ago, and the House proposal would be to reestablish, reinstate the committee with a new name. It identifies the memberships or membership on the committee, notes some of the tasks, and provides for expenses. This committee would be set to expire June 30th of 2021. Sections 7 and 8 relate to state bicycle routes. One is a clarification of an existing state bicycle route, and the second, Section 8, establishes a new bikeway. Section 10 is a special plate that is house only. This would create a pedal Minnesota plate. It's somewhat typical or standard relative to other plates that are proposed in both House and Senate positions in this bill, as well as in state statute as far as setting eligibility, providing for plate design and plate transfer. This is proposed as a donation plate of $20 annually. And the funds that are donated would go to the active transportation account. And then House Section 25 would modify a minimum floor for the Department of Transportation to allocate some portion of federal funds that would have to go towards transportation alternatives projects. So bicycle, pedestrian, trail-related projects. One of the things to note is that the provisions in House Article 5 are all effective August 1. And there's a separate section that sets that effective date as a article-wide provision. Moving next to House Article 6, this contains a wide variety of policy and finance provisions. So this is kind of the bulk of the rest of the omnibus. Section 1 in Article 6 modifies the allocation of revenue from motor vehicle sales tax that currently by formula is set to go to Greater Minnesota Transit purposes, and it allows the Department of Transportation to use a percentage-based portion for program administration instead of a fixed amount that's specified in statute. And then moving to House Section 6, there are a series of memorial highways and bridges that are proposed in both House and Senate. The House has one that's House only, and then there are several that are identical between House and Senate. So that the House only one is the private Joseph Marfowler Memorial Bridge. Again, that's House Section 6. Then moving to House Section 11, the proposal would authorize MnDOT to create a preference on employment for some projects that are federally funded and located within 60 miles of a Indian reservation. So it's a Indian employment preference provision. Next is another special plate. This is Section 20 on the House side. And this would create an honorary consul special plate. And this would have more limited eligibility than special plates generally. So it would be for honorary consulate members would go into effect January 1st, 2022, which is the effective date for all of the other House special plate provisions. Moving next to a number of sections on the House side, 49 to 52, 53. These all deal with driver's license suspensions, and the thrust of this is to prevent or direct the Department of Public Safety to no longer suspend or resuspend a driver's license under a number of scenarios. So if under these scenarios, a person would no longer get their license suspended, or if their license had already been suspended, resuspension or a continuation or tacking on of the suspension would be prohibited. This involves infractions such as failure to appear in court for some violations, like a petty misdemeanor or driving after suspension violation, as well as for convictions for driving after suspension or revocation, failure to pay a ticket or a traffic ticket or a parking ticket. And the provisions also include a eligibility for those who had gotten their license suspended for one of these violations, being able to seek reinstatement of the license. Next is House Section 42. This would authorize reinstatement of a driver's license or identification card for a applicant who is a federal employee who has been assigned to foreign service outside of the United States. And this eligibility would also apply to the applicant's spouse and some family members. And this remote reinstatement carries a number of requirements that are laid out for addressing aspects of the license application process, such as photographs and having a previous valid license. House Section 43 broadens eligibility for an identifier that identifies somebody as being a veteran. So that would include eligibility for some National Guard and other members of United States Armed Force Reserve components. House Section 53 is somewhat related to the suspended driver's license provisions that were touched on earlier, but this goes to a different aspect of kind of that broader discussion. This eliminates fee stacking of suspended licenses, so that if somebody's license has been suspended or resuspended for multiple reasons, in order to get the license reinstated, the person would only pay one fee. This House Section 53 sort of works somewhat in conjunction with House Section 55, which also eliminates fee stacking for revoked licenses. So there's suspensions and revocations of two different losses of driving privileges with kind of different implications to them. There are various fees that can be imposed depending on the violation that occurred to lose driving privileges. And between these two sets of provisions, the person would pay only one fee, but they would pay the highest of what would be otherwise imposed under current law, depending on what violations are involved. I might note, too, that House Section 55 on the driver's license revocation fee, this is one piece of multiple changes that are being proposed between House and Senate. So there are some in the same section, other proposals, and we'll be looping back around to this in further discussions of same and similar provisions. And there are a couple other instances where there's some overlap of provisions that are both, that contain both House only or Senate only, as well as similar or identical language. Moving next, another kind of piece of the driver's license suspension is a reporting requirement. This is House Section 56, and this directs the Department of Public Safety to report on suspensions and revocations. Then moving to House Section 57, this establishes a statewide goal regarding reduction of vehicle miles traveled, and the goal would be to reduce VMT, vehicles miles traveled, by 20% by 2050. And the provision also directs the Department of Transportation to perform planning and analysis related to that goal. House Section 58 modifies MNSHIP, the Minnesota State Highway Investment Plan, and it sets some new investment priorities to place additional emphasis on preservation and maintenance, as well as make some technical and conforming changes. And then House Section 59 sets some planning and performance measurement and tracking requirements for MnDOT, as well as asset management requirements, lays out some information that districts need to include and analyze in their capital highway investment planning process. And then House Section 64 establishes a new electric vehicle infrastructure development program. Mr. Lee had mentioned in going over the spreadsheet earlier that there's a reallocation of the electric vehicle surcharge as well as an appropriation for a new program. So both those funding streams fund this the program that's being established in this section. So MnDOT would develop the program, and the statutory language lays out various requirements around who is eligible to receive grants, what the funds could be used for, and some general administrative requirements. Next is House Section 72, and this is a clarification on uses of the funds in the grade crossing safety account to specify that various administrative costs in working on grade crossing safety would also be permissible uses of funds for MnDOT from that account. House Section 75 and 76 modify a existing program on preparedness and response to transportation incidents involving discharge of oil or other hazardous substances, broadens the uses of funds, as well as explicitly authorizing some local organizations to be recipients of a portion of the grant funds. This was one of the appropriations that was identified in the spreadsheet review earlier, appropriations review. Next is House Section 77, and this increases a portion of fine revenue wherein the State Patrol is involved. That currently a portion goes into a grade crossing safety account. This increases that share from 1 to 2.5 million going into the account. Next is House Section 86, and this is authorization for the Metropolitan Council to issue bonds that are backed or covered in debt service payment through a regional property tax. So this is 2 years of regional transit capital authorizations for bonding. House Section 87 is a directive to the Metropolitan Council to deploy its bus fleet, regular route bus fleet, in areas based on reducing emissions in those areas that are identified as having poor air quality. And then House Section 88 directs the Metropolitan Council to develop a plan so that by 2040, its transit fleet would be consist of zero emission transit vehicles. There are various planning requirements that are laid out in the statute for that transition process. And then House Sections 89 as well as 91 to 93 establish a administrative citations program. So this is the authority for the Metropolitan Council to issue administrative citations for non-sworn officers to issue administrative citations for some transit-related fare violations. And it sets out some of the policy and citation setting requirements for the Met Council's program on this. House Section 90 is another piece of the driver's license suspension provisions. This is a reporting data collection element that is directed to the state courts. Then House Sections 94 through 96 extend the number of projects where MnDOT can use the construction manager general contractor method of contracting, so that the cap would be increased to 20 projects instead of 10. Section 97 broadens the uses of funds that the city of Minneapolis can put towards transit projects. So the city has established under a law from a number of years ago a value capture district of a set of parcels, and currently those funds can only be used for streetcar. The change in the House proposal would broaden the use of funds to allow for a transit line of other mode types, so busway or other transitway types. House Section 98 provides for a couple of work zone safety planning and programming. Kind of two pieces to it. One is to direct establishment of a proposal to do a pilot program on using automated traffic enforcement for work zone safety. So the proposal would be developed over the coming interim and then submitted to the legislature for further consideration in the next session. And then the second piece of this language is to direct an assessment of work zones with some specific features for implementation yet this summer. And then House Section 99 authorizes the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board to set speed limits on roads within a park that are under its jurisdiction. And then House Section 102 is a directive to the Department of Public Safety on rulemaking that would broaden the number or the set of individuals, medical providers, who can sign off on some physician statements that are required as part of the driver's licensing process, so that physician's assistants and advanced practice registered nurses would also be able to submit those medical statements. And that, Mr. Chair, concludes the house-only provision. So and I'll pass it to Ms. Dangle for the Senate side.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. And Ms. Dangle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So we'll sort of go back to the beginning and sort of start over with the Senate-only provisions. And as Mr. Burris indicated, some of the articles are organized a little bit differently. So I'll try to avoid any confusion on what article we're talking about, but if you know there are any questions, let me know. So we'll go back to the article about taxes and fees that Mr. Burris started with. And the first Senate-only provisions are Senate come from Article 2. There are several sections that have to do with MnPass lanes. And the changes here are that the Commissioner of Transportation has to set MnPass fees so that they vary in amount based on the level of traffic instead of the time of day. And the fees must be set so that it pays for all of the costs related to that MnPass lane. And then the revenue that comes in must be spent in a specified statutory order. There's some repealers related to this, specifically relating to the I-35 corridor and a grant of rulemaking. And additionally, there are changes that allow anybody to use the MnPass lanes on a holiday if that is approved by the federal government. Another Senate-only provision, Section 11, increases license plate fees starting July 1, 2022. Another provision, Article 3, Section 15, is a trip permit. This is a permit issued by MnDOT, and instead of setting it at a certain amount, it's the 1/12th of the registration for trucks and tractors. The next sections have to do with the additional payments that Ms. Boyd talked about earlier, and those are additional payments to driver's license agents and deputy registrars based on the number of transactions that they perform. Senate section Article 3, Section 22 has to do... Well, let me step back. I won't explain all of these individually. So there are a series of sections in the Senate bill that have to do with how HUTDF and trunk highway funds are spent. and in some situations make an open appropriation from the general fund to the Commissioner of Public Safety or Transportation instead of an appropriation out of the Trunk Highway Fund or HUTDF. Additionally, there are some regulations on, you know, what you can use these two funds for and some specifically prohibited purposes. And then in addition, there's an annual Attorney General report similar to what is done now, talking about any proposed budget expenditures and whether pointing out whether they are a non-highway purpose. And those are sort of sprinkled throughout the bill, so I won't sort of go through those section by section, but that's sort of the concept of many of those sections. And Ms. Boyd also sort of talked about those shifting in where things are funded from. The Senate Article 3, Section 54 has a no-show fee for people that miss or cancel at the last minute for a driver's license test. And then switching now to Senate Article 2, these relate to MnDOT. And there are a series of provisions that prohibit the Commissioner of Transportation from converting vehicle travel lanes into bicycle lanes or routes, and also prohibit the Commissioner from spending HUTDF or trunk highway funds on bicycle lanes or routes. There is a Senate-only provision, Article 2, Section 7, that sets out a process for local governments designating bikeways on a segment of road where there's a disability parking space. There is another Senate-only provision, Article 2, Section 14, that modify the corridors of commerce criteria and require project readiness as an additional criteria. And then all criteria must be given equal weight in the process except for the criterion of considering regional balance. There's a change to the Small Cities Assistance account, which makes this a statutory appropriation of the money in that account, and that relates to some of the sales tax changes that were discussed earlier. The Senate has a Senate-only provision on salvage title, requiring all salvage vehicles, regardless of value or age, to receive a salvage title. There is another Senate-only provision that it requires the Commissioner of Transportation to set the speed limit on Interstate 35E in St. Paul at 55 miles per hour. Another Senate-only provision, Section 45, amends the definition of road construction materials in relation to a special permit. There are several sections that authorize online driver's education as a way a person 15, 16, 17, or 18 or older may satisfy their driver ed requirements. That's only for the classroom portion, not the behind the wheel portion. There are sections for third party testing for Class D and for commercial driver's license programs. Essentially, DPS will, there's a process for DPS to approve third-party programs and third-party testers to perform these functions. And the statute spells out how this is done and how the tests are performed. There are several sections relating to project selection. Various existing project selection procedures are modified by requiring the commissioner to post more information about the process and projects on the department's website. And in situations where there's a project selection program and there is no procedure or process in place, the commissioner has to adopt an official policy for that selection process. Another Senate-only provision is to codify the Transportation Programming and Investment Committee. This is a committee existing within MnDOT. This codifies the committee with a few changes, particularly in membership, requiring legislators to serve on the committee. And the committee provides policy direction and recommendations on MnDOT's capital investments. The Senate requires the commissioner to develop and implement a pavement investment guide and then review all of the local district office decisions to make sure that they comply with the selection guidelines. There are several reports that the Senate requires, one of which is requiring metro counties that impose transportation sales and use taxes to submit an annual report to the Commissioner of Transportation, who then compiles them and provides that to the legislature. Under current law, the OLA does a salary and benefits survey of law enforcement officers and a designated timeline every few years. This amends the years in which those surveys are done. Moving to some Met Council provisions, the Senate requires the Metropolitan Council to establish Metro Mobility fares in accordance with federal law and use the fare revenue only for Metro Mobility purposes. There are some additional requirements relating to different types of transit. One is that counties have to fund all current and future guideway costs. Another prohibits the use of local money to pay for the cost or operations of certain busways. And each opt-out provider is required to submit an annual report to the council with its projected total operating expenses for the current calendar year and projected operating reserve fund balance. And the council must also report that same information to the legislature, as well as compiling all of the opt-out reports and bundling that all together and sending it off to the legislature. Another report that the Senate requires the Commissioner of Transportation, Revenue, and MMB to submit a report to the legislature on transportation revenues and expenditures in the state. The Senate requires the Commissioner of Transportation working with the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development to procure a statewide freight network optimization tool, which will assist public and private entities in optimizing movement of freight throughout the state. A Senate-only provision requires that whenever there's an additional request for funding for the state patrol related to civil unrest or rioting, that request include an explanation of the need for the response and why that was a higher priority than patrolling the state highways. As Ms. Boyd mentioned, there is a same-day driver's license pilot project in two locations, and that requires the driver's license agents to issue same-day non-compliant driver's licenses. Another provision requires OTS, the state court administrator, and several others to work together to figure out the best way to handle a situation where there is a ticket issued or a citation issued to somebody and the box that requires an appearance in court was not checked but should otherwise require a court appearance. The Senate requires the commissioner of public safety to ensure availability and testing times for CDL and school bus endorsement tests. The Senate requires the Metropolitan Council to distribute COVID-19 related federal funds to opt-out providers pursuant to the federal urbanized formula that has been used in the past. And related to that, the federal funds, the opt-out providers must also report to the legislature on all expenditures of their COVID-19 related federal funds. There's a provision that requires the Commissioner of Transportation and the Metropolitan Council to ask the FTA for permission to discontinue the North Star commuter rail. And if approval is granted, there's a process on how to terminate that service. And then the last Senate-only provisions have to do with effective dates, and that's defaulting effective dates to July 1, 2021. And that's the walkthrough of the Senate-only provisions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Ms. Stengel. This is now an opportunity for, again, members to ask any questions of any of these provisions of staff. We had a lot to go through here, and of course, we'll be revisiting many of these as well in our discussions here over the next couple of weeks. But if anyone had any questions, now would be a good time to ask them. And let me scan the virtual room here. I don't see any questions. Senator Newman, did you have any, or Chairman Newman, did you have any thoughts or comments about anything so far? And if not, we can maybe transition into adopting some of our same provisions, or at least go through those. Chairman Newman?
No, I have nothing further insofar as the walkthrough is concerned, Mr. Chairman. And I certainly think that we can proceed now to begin to adopt some of the same provisions. I do want to just touch on the question of, you know, we obviously don't have our targets yet, and a lot of the policy provisions do involve targets or spending or having revenue come in. And Mr. Chairman, I would prefer holding off on addressing and adopting any of those same or similars until we have our actual targets. In the list that we have for today, there, you know, in the SAMES, there is a few of them that have got a very small amount of spending involved, and I really don't have any problem going forward with those. But I just want to make sure that the committee is on the same wavelength, that we're not going to be addressing either policy or budget issues until after we get targets, albeit there is a small amount of money that we will be talking about today. That's the only comment I had, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Well, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I completely agree with you, and I don't think it's an issue today, although when Mr. Burris Ms. Stengel go through the proposal for adoption, it would maybe be helpful to at least identify those provisions that have some fiscal impact and how much. But I completely agree with you and Chair Newman, and one of the reasons I said that we're going to have to spend a little time working through the similar provisions, because there are a number of the similar provisions that do have fiscal impact. And so we'll sort through those for tomorrow and Wednesday, but we really are not in a position to even adopt even similar provisions, given that some of those, given that some of them do have, I think, fairly substantial impact. So I don't see any other questions or comments, Mr. Chair. So I will now call on our House and Senate research staff to go through. Members, you should, if you do, you should have in your packets a document called titled Transportation Omnibus Conference Committee Provision Consideration List for 5321. And we'll be working off of that document. There are a total of 28 items. And I think that it would be appropriate for staff to go through these. And some are have the language that's exactly the same in the House and Senate, and some just have some technical differences. So members, we are going to work off of this document now. We'll have staff go through it. After that, if there's any agencies or others that in the public that have comments and would like to comment, that you'll have your opportunity after this walkthrough. And then at the end of that, we will vote on this provision. So again, I don't know if Mr. Burris, did you want to take the lead on that, or Ms. Stengel, or a combination of you? This is, again, working off the document, Transportation Omnibus Conference Committee Provisions Consideration List for today. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, so Mr. Howe is going to be, I believe, bringing up the document on Zoom for screen share, and I can start us off, and Ms. Engel could potentially bring in some other comments or clarifications as needed. One thing I'd like to note at the outset, as you alluded to, Mr. Chair, there are some technical differences with some of the provisions where the language is not identical as it reads. The substance is the same as far as the policy impact, and staff had conferred and had some suggestions for the committee to consider on whether to go with the House or the Senate language as far as those technical provisions. The other thing I'd like
Burris,
to note,
before you start, this isn't a major issue. Your mic is a little bit, there's some interference, I think, with that. I don't know if there's any adjustment you can make, but I just kind of came up towards the end of your presentation prior to that. But if there's any adjustment you can make, that would be helpful.
Okay. Is this helpful with the?
Yeah, that's better. That's better. Thank you, Mr. Burris.
Here? Okay.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair and members, the other thing to note at the outset is that there are some sections listed here where, as I had mentioned in the walkthrough, where there are aspects of the section that are the same between House and Senate. And so they're identified in this list as part of the same and similars. There are some other aspects in some sections that are House only or Senate only, or there's some more substantive policy difference. And so for a motion that would be considered for adoption today, the idea, as I understand it, would be to adopt the same portions, and we'll identify those as we go through so that members are and staff are very clear on what aspects, what pieces of some sections are being adopted. And adoption of those does not prevent further adoption by the conference committee at some other point of other House only or Senate only or other elements in the language. So it doesn't fend off anything. So this would be just going to the same or similar portions. So moving into the list then, Mr. Chair and members, the first one is on line one, and this creates or modifies a endorsement fee that is paid in order to get operating privileges for a motorcycle and as a separate endorsement on a driver's license. There's some technical changes as well as increased fees. So this is one where there's a revenue impact. This, like a couple of the others in this list, do not have an impact on the general fund. So this would be a driver services operating account revenue increase. That language is the same between the House and Senate. The second provision, set of provisions, is line two, and this modifies definitions, classifications of electric-assisted bicycles, as well as updating some of the operating rules for e-bikes, equipment requirements, capabilities for the electric-assisted bicycles, as well as labeling requirements. And the staff recommendation on this would be going with the Senate language, and that would avoid any potential clarity issues with regard to one of the sections where the House and Senate are the same for a portion. This is House Section 21, by the way. And then a portion is the same between House and Senate, and then there is some House-only language as well that relates to bicycle regulations more generally that could be taken up by the committee at another point in time. Then moving to line three, there are a couple of modifications regarding the eminent domain process and commissioners who get appointed by a court to resolve eminent domain questions. So this would modify the appointment of those who are appointed and whether they need to reside in Minnesota, as well as change the process around identifying conflicts of interest. Then moving to line four, there are a couple of turnbacks of trunk highways to the county system. There are statutory changes and conditional repeal of trunk highways that are identified in statute currently. And then line five contains a couple of memorial highways that are designated on different segments of the trunk highway system. This language is the same between the House and Senate. Then line six, there are a series of sections that go to MnDOT's authority to sell excess real estate, and there are various situations and circumstances involving brokers and no bids under sales processes where MnDOT would be able to sell the land under more situations. Moving then to line seven, there are a couple of cross references in current law that don't go to the right spot, and this would fix those. The recommendation here from staff would be on Senate. This is on page R88, Senate Section 31 would be to go with the Senate language for a number of lines, and this involves a couple of technical changes to modernize language and then fix the cross-reference. So it's lines 42.21 to 42.24 for technical changes, and then the technical fix is on line 42.30. So this is an example where there are some other Senate-only changes that would not be picked up by this if a motion were made regarding this change that could be addressed at a later point. And then moving to line 8, there's an elimination of a requirement around county highway engineers having to reside in Minnesota. That's the same between House and Senate. Moving to line 9, the proposal that is, again, the same between House and Senate would broaden the number of plates that are issued for the lifetime of a veteran for certain veterans' plates. And then on line 10, both House and Senate have a proposal to establish a new special plate for Minnesota agriculture. And there is a technical difference on this one that involves how the eligibility list is constructed. And the suggestion would be to take the House language in this case. And then moving to line 11, both House and Senate have a provision that sets a weight-based structure for fees for some commercial vehicles that receive a temporary permit for operation in Minnesota. And then there's also a change on making the permits available when the vehicle is operated in Minnesota. Next is line 12, and that provides for two specific dates of installment payments for some types of vehicles for when the registration tax would be paid. And that's the same, again, between House and Senate. Line 13, if Mr. Howe, if you could move the scroll down the list a little ways. Line 13 is a technical change. It sets a cross-reference. It doesn't establish a new fee, but sets a reference to an existing fee. And the technical recommendation from staff on this would be using the House language, which is Article 6, Section 22. And then line 14 contains a proposal on driver and vehicle records access and fee setting for obtaining subscription-based data, driver data, vehicle data, title transfer data, as well as revising existing bulk data request fee setting provision. The substance between House and Senate is the substantive impact is the same. The recommendation here would be the House language. One thing to note in this list is the repealer should be to repeal section 168.327. So there's a misprint on what section would be in the repealer. This is another instance where the repealer section, which is House Section 107, Senate Section 85, contains a number of repealers of various provisions. So this would just go to repealing this one subdivision that relates to the driver and vehicle records access subscription services. Moving then next to escort vehicles, there's a provision that's the same between House and Senate, and this would allow for or require escorts on additional situations with loads that exceed the dimensional limits extending over the center line. And that is line 19. And Mr. Howe, if you could take us down a little bit further. Thank you. And then line 20 is, again, the same between House and Senate. And this would authorize the Department of Public Safety to provide a variance from some of the requirements on obtaining a identification card for those who are homebound. I might pause for a moment. I was just going to say at the outset that a number of these provisions are agency proposals, and I hadn't attempted to identify all which as we went through, but quite a few are part of the initiatives either in the governor's budget or in agency policy bills from Department of Public Safety, Department of Transportation, as well as the Metropolitan Council. That's not the entirety of the list, but it's the bulk of them, I think. So moving to line 21, one portion of the sections identified here, paragraph F, allows for installment payments when somebody is paying the reinstatement fee for a revoked license. And this would broaden who can pay in two installments so that somebody would not have to just be eligible for public defender services. So adoption on the basis of this entry by the conference committee would just be going to the proposal in paragraph F of House and Senate. And the recommendation here would be the Senate language, because that's the only change in that section on the Senate side. So the House side has some further changes that are House only that are proposed. Line 22 relates to the Safe Routes to School program and is one of actually several changes that just eliminate obsolete dates that were now passed that were specified in statute a number of years ago. So this is paragraph D in both the House and Senate language. The recommendation here would be to go with House section 63. Moving then to line 23, this is a series of sections that also eliminate obsolete dates. So these are technical changes. Line 24 moves the date where a annual forecast of debt service on bonds issued that are backed by the Trunk Highway Fund would be due. So it's pushed out by 1 month. This is the same between House and Senate. And then line 25 is a revision to the federal regulations that are incorporated into state law by reference on disclosure of odometer information so that the latest federal regulations would be incorporated. And this would also be a revision that allows for electronic reporting of the odometer or the mileage of the vehicle. This is the same between House and Senate. Section 26, again, the same between House and Senate, and provides for the direction to the state patrol and authority to dispose of unclaimed property. This would provide for both property and cash. So this does have a general fund implication. I might stand corrected by fiscal staff once I finish the list. But if I recall correctly, it's a positive, not a negative. So it's more revenue to the general fund when involved a hit. So kind of helps our target a teeny bit. And moving to then line 27. There are a series of changes regarding small unmanned aircraft, definition of terms, revising the registration fee that's imposed to register some unmanned aircraft, setting requirements for local units of government on ordinances and notification to MnDOT, and revising some liability requirements. This is another provision, or this list contains another provision with some fiscal impacts to the aeronautics fund, if I recall correctly offhand. And then finally, Mr. Chair, line 28 contains a repealer so that motorists involved in some crashes would no longer have to directly report to the Department of Public Safety. and reporting would be covered in general by or continue to be required by or of law enforcement. And this is another instance where there would just be one subdivision, section 169.09, subdivision 7, that would be incorporated if the motion involved adoption of this line, and the rest of the repeal would still potentially be considered by the conference committee at a later point. That, Mr. Chair, is the list of the same and similars.
Thank you so much, Mr. Burris, and thank you especially. I know you worked hard on this, Ms. Stengel, over the weekend and Friday, and we very, very much appreciate it. Members, do you have questions? I know maybe, Mr. Burris, if I know you identified line 26 as one with fiscal impact. Do me highlight the other ones. Just this is for Chair Newman's earlier question, just so folks know. Again, I don't see any of these as having any impact to what Chair Newman was raising. We don't want to be voting on major general fund items today. However, I think it would be helpful to know to identify those provisions. I think you did, but it would be good just one more time to have those at least identified for the committee. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, and I might look to back up from my fiscal colleagues, but line one, I believe, would have an impact. The special plates, so line 10, would have a small amount. And then the installment payments on line 12, I'm not sure if that shows up as an impact. So I might put a pin in that one. And then I believe line 14, which is the driver and vehicle records access fees, and the line 27, the small unmanned aircraft, and line 26, State Patrol unclaimed property.
Okay. Thank you. Chairman Newman, did you have a question or comment?
There we go. I had to unmute. Just a comment and a question. Mr. Chairman, I am satisfied with Mr. Burris's explanation of the various items that do have a bit of a fiscal implication, but I think that we're really talking about a very small amount of money, and so I'm satisfied with moving forward with adopting these same and similars without any further question regarding the fiscal implications. I do have a question for Mr. Burris, if I might.
And proceed, Chair Newman.
This has to do, Mr. Burris, almost exclusively with, I am anticipating we are going to adopt these same and similars as outlined in this document in one motion. And I'd like to go back to, if I may, on line 18, you were talking about the repealing of certain administrative rules. Is the document that we're looking at for purposes of adopting this in one motion, is the document accurate insofar as the repealer is concerned? Or were you indicating to us some kind of a change or a technical update?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Chair Newman, so on the House side, the document is accurate as to what would be part of a motion that would cover the repeal of administrative rules. So on the House language, which is found on page R180, if you are looking at the side-by-side, House Section 107, paragraph C, that list of administrative rules that's being repealed is entirely goes to the school bus inspection provision. So I think there would be no further changes that would be necessary to pick up all of those changes that go along with codification of the school bus inspection standards. I'm not sure if I somehow managed to miss that line. I'm not remembering talking about school bus inspections as I went through the list, so my apologies if I managed to skip over that entirely before.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman,
Chairman Newman.
Anticipating that we are going to be adopting the House language on line 18, I think Mr. Burris has answered the question that I had. Other than that, Mr. Chairman, I have no other questions. Other members may, but whenever you are ready, I am prepared to make the appropriate motion, or any of the other members can make the appropriate motion, whichever you choose, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Well, let's see if there's further discussion, and also I would invite if there are I know we have representatives from all of the different agencies, state agencies that our committees have jurisdiction over are on the call. And if they had any comments or wanted to testify to these provisions, Chair Newman will discuss at the end of our meeting that we will have a conversation with them tomorrow on broader and more general topics. But I would ask if they had anything specific on any of these provisions. This would be a time to share those concerns or ideas with us. Otherwise, we'll have member questions and comments, and then we can proceed to a vote. And I will scan the room here. I don't see any hands up. So, Chair Newman, I think we're ready to vote here. Mr. Chairman, to move the language on lines 1 through 28 with staff technical recommendations, that would be in order.
That, Mr. Chairman, is my motion.
Okay. Is there discussion to Chairman Newman's motion to adopt lines 1 through 28 as in the document before us? I believe we can do a voice vote on this. Mr. Dodge, is there any protocol here? Do we need to take a roll call, or I assume a voice vote is in order here?
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that a voice vote is in order.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Chairman Newman's motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails, and the article is adopted. So thank you very much, Mr. Burris and staff, for all of your help today. Members, that concludes the business that we have before us. I wanted to give Chair Newman the last word here, maybe walk us through a preview of what we might expect tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And tomorrow, as Chair Hornstein has indicated, we are on a set schedule for purposes of the conference committee hearings. And the Senate will meet at 9 o'clock in the morning on Zoom. So 9 o'clock tomorrow would be our appointed hour for our conference committee tomorrow. What both Chair Hornstein and I are trying to do is put us in a position so that when the targets are given to us, we will be in a position to move fairly aggressively in addressing those targets. And so we want to get some of this background information and less controversial items out of the way as soon as possible. With that in mind, we anticipate that tomorrow we will have the appropriate agencies in and allow them to testify on, in general, the bills overall. We have agreed that as we move forward in the conference committees in the days ahead, if agencies have got some specific issue that they want to come in and talk about, we would certainly allow them to do that. So tomorrow is going to be, in essence, a somewhat abbreviated opportunity for the state agencies to come in and testify. We are also going to have an individual come in and talk to us tomorrow about deputy registrar fees and DVS fees and FTEs. This is something that has bothered both of us, frankly, for the last couple of years, in that we have gotten rid of MnLARS. We now have MnDrive, and both DVS and the deputy registrars are telling us that they need fee increases and more FTEs. I just think it's really important if we could drill down a little bit and get some recommendations as to how to handle that controversy as between the DVS and the DRs. So tomorrow we're going to have Mr. Rick King come in and talk to us. He has a proposal that he'd like to run past us. This is something that has not yet been heard in the Senate. I do not believe it has been heard in the House, but Chair Hornstein and I think it is worthwhile for us to listen to in terms of a proposal, in hopes that in the next session we would be in a better position to address this somewhat controversial position that ultimately we're going to have to talk about. So Mr. King will be in regarding his proposal. And I believe, members, that you have been sent a copy of his proposal so that you would be able to look at it overnight if you so choose. After the testifiers, we're going to do our best to adopt some of the similars. We will certainly talk about them. I don't anticipate we'll be adopting similars with budget implications, but there's probably going to be some policy without budget implications that hopefully we would be able to work our way through. Mr. Chairman, that would be my comments regarding the hearing tomorrow. So I would throw it back to you, Chair Hornstein.
Thank you so much, Chairman Newman. And there is no further business before our conference committee for House File 1684 today. And so with that, we stand adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow. Thank you very much, members. Thank you very much, staff, for a very helpful and productive first day of conference committee. See you tomorrow morning.